Welcome back to HealthLink on Air, produced each week by Upstate Medical University and University Hospital. Linda Cohen along with you. The year was 1938. The place was Yankee Stadium, filled with 60,000 devoted fans, as Lou Gehrig, baseball giant and national icon, stepped to the microphone to bid farewell to baseball, thank his fans, and to declare himself the luckiest man on the face of the earth. This despite the fact that Gehrig had just been diagnosed with amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, or ALS, a degenerative neurologic disease little known at that time that would soon claim his life and make him a symbol of a hero struck down by random, inexplicable fate. But was this truly a random event? And did Lou Gehrig actually have the disease that bears his name? Well, that's a question that's been raised by a recent study described in the Journal of Neuropathology and Experimental Neurology, which looked at the relationship between brain trauma and later motor degeneration in athletes. The study found that some athletes who sustained repeated concussions went on to develop ALS-like symptoms, but did not actually have the disease. So what does this mean for the over 30,000 people in the U.S. today diagnosed with ALS? Does this have implications for further research and testing, for prevention, or for a new pathway towards a cure? Joining me in the studio this morning to explore the answers to these questions is Dr. Jeremy Scheffner, professor and chair of neurology at Upstate Medical University, who directs the MDA ALS Research and Treatment Center, the ALS Clinic at University Hospital, and engages in research in ALS and other neuromuscular diseases. Welcome, Dr. Scheffner. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Oh, it's a pleasure.
So to begin with, what is ALS?
Well, ALS is a degenerative neurologic disease where two parts of the nervous system become damaged. First are the areas of the brain that control movement. Those are called the upper motor neurons. And secondly, the nerve cells in the spinal cord that send their processes out and actually contact the muscles. Both of these nerve types become progressively more damaged and ultimately die, leading to weakness, respiratory failure, inability to eat and talk, and ultimately death.
Is it an incurable disease?
It is an incurable disease. We do have one drug that clearly reduces the speed of progression. It's a drug called riluzole. It's been with us since about 1993 and reduces the rate of progression by about 30% or so. But for a disease that strikes people all the way through the spectrum of life from young adulthood to old age, a 30% reduction of rate is certainly not sufficient.
Do we know what causes it?
We really don't. We actually know less about ALS and what the risk factors are for it than many other diseases. There are a few hints. Probably the greatest piece of evidence is that veterans who serve in the military during times of conflict end up having a slightly increased risk of ALS as compared to other people of that same age during that same period in time. And that was true from World War I to World War II to Korea to Vietnam to the first Gulf War. So there's something not unique about the Gulf War or any syndromes associated with that, but with the military service during times of conflict in general.
Do they know why, though? What about military service?
We really don't. And people have invoked the possibility of toxins on the battlefield, but many different things were used in World War I than in the Gulf War. It is possible that either psychological or physical stress could be responsible. And that does fit into the question of whether athletes or people who receive various sorts of trauma are at increased risk.
Now, getting back to that question that we obviously raised at the introduction, right. This is a very controversial topic.
It is, and it's been studied previously. There's a very interesting study looking at Italian professional soccer players, suggesting that these people have about a 6 times higher risk of getting ALS than other males of the same age in Italy at that same time. That study has been confirmed, and so there's something about physical activity or trauma that may increase the risk of ALS in an unknown way.
But do you think that what we're seeing is really ALS? I guess that was the question. Is it possible that Lou Gehrig did not have Lou Gehrig's disease?
Well, by definition, he was Lou Gehrig, and he had his disease.
Or was it? My point is, was it ALS?
It was ALS, and so The article that generated so much interest, I think, was grossly misrepresented in the popular news. This was a study of autopsies of 12 individuals, all of whom were athletes and all of whom had what's called post-traumatic encephalopathy, meaning that they were becoming demented, showing personality changes, showing short-term memory loss, and clearly had evidence on imaging studies of damage to the brain. So there were 12 of these people. Nine of them just had the symptoms I described. Three of them also had some evidence of motor neuron degeneration. So they had some evidence of motor problems in addition to these other obvious things that brought them to attention. Did they have ALS? Well, ALS is probably a syndrome rather than a disease. It probably can be caused by different things. But I certainly disagree with the conclusion that was reached in the popular press that these people could not have had ALS because their pathology or their autopsy findings were atypical, because we see quite a variation in autopsy findings in ALS. Okay. So
that cleared kind of correlation between head trauma, concussion, and later motor degeneration is not clear. I mean, it's not in evidence.
It's certainly not, based on this study, which specifically identified 12 people who died after head injuries, it says nothing about the risk of head injuries for motor neuron degeneration. Now, head injury is not good for you, and there is certainly increasing evidence that what we used to think of as minor head injuries or concussions in childhood or young adulthood are not as benign as they probably were thought to be when I was growing up.
Yeah, I think was my experience as well as a parent of kids who were playing soccer or playing football. You know, there was all of this kind of machismo associated with, well, you just play through. You just had a concussion, you just play through. And I think that I read that's part of what Lou Gehrig's kind of Iron Man image was, that he played through all of his many head injuries.
Well, it was. He didn't have that many head injuries in baseball, but he was a football player at Cornell.
Right.
And certainly, you know, and it's hard to imagine somebody playing football in the 1920s who didn't get hit on the head.
I don't think they even had as adequate helmets back then.
I'm sure they did not. Mm-hmm. So clearly that is not good for you. There's no question about that. And there's increasing evidence that after a head injury, there are subtle cognitive thinking problems that people have for a very long time. But there is not strong evidence that those kinds of injuries lead to ALS.
There isn't. But no. But in any case, it's probably good advice, it sounds to me, like if you have a concussion, sports related or otherwise, not necessarily to go right back into the fray, to take the time needed to really rest it out.
And there are specialists now in this area, and there are whole programs devoted to post-concussion.
Upstate has a program, doesn't it?
Upstate does have a program.
Yes. Well, tell me more about what you're doing here at Upstate. I know that you're doing some clinical research, which I think will have great promise, and it's very important.
We certainly hope so. So I run a group called the Northeast ALS Clinical Trials Consortium, which is a group of 92 ALS centers throughout the U.S. and Canada. And we perform really most of the clinical research on ALS that's done in North America. Currently, we're running now five separate studies of different therapies in ALS, ranging from stem cell therapies to gene therapy to drugs.
Wow.
And so there's a whole host of very interesting potential treatments. One I'd like to mention in particular, because it's actively enrolling and has great promise, is a study of ceftriaxone in ALS.
Wow.
Ceftriaxone is a well-known drug. It's an intravenous antibiotic. It's used in hospitals for severe infections. But it also has some properties that we did not know about until recently. In particular, it actually turns on specific genes. And the gene that we're interested in is a gene for a protein that takes away a chemical in the brain called glutamate, which we know accumulates and becomes toxic in ALS. And so the ability to get rid of excess glutamate in animal models of ALS has been very effective. And we think this drug has a lot of promise in ALS.
So I think that's so interesting that drugs that have been, and we've seen that in other iterations where there'll be a drug that has been used for various and sundry other things, all of a sudden shows promise in a totally different area.
Yes, it's certainly something that we see in many areas of medicine. Certainly that doesn't mean we shouldn't be developing new drugs, because we obviously need to. But there are many drugs that we only partially understand, and it's certainly possible that drugs can have both positive and negative unintended consequences.
So this would be a treatment.
And this is a treatment.
Are you looking for people to participate in this study right now?
We are actively enrolling throughout the U.S. We're aiming for 600 patients.
Wow.
We now have about 310 patients, so we've got a ways to go. Here at Upstate, we have 23 patients enrolled in this study and are actively seeking more. We're also participating in several other studies here at Upstate. There is a very interesting trial with a drug that the purpose of the drug is actually to increase muscle strength, so that even if you have a somewhat abnormal nerve supply to muscles, if the muscles themselves are stronger, function and symptoms can be improved. And so this is another study that we're actively enrolling for.
When you talked about, well, let me just say that if people want to get involved, they can just contact the Department of Neurology at Upstate Medical University?
That's right. There are many different ways. They can call Health Connections. They can call the Neurology Department. Or they can look at our website. All of these things are available there as well.
You mentioned things like stem cell research. I mean, is there a hope that there would be a way to actually prevent, or very early on in the diagnosis process, treat this disease and forestall all of the ensuing debilitating effects?
Well, at its most dramatic, the idea of stem cell transplants is that you could take cells that have been damaged or killed and replace them with new viable cells that take over from the cells that no longer are present. Now, the nervous system is a remarkably complicated place, and so in addition just to finding the right cells and putting them in the right place, you somehow have to figure out how to get all the connections made. So there's a long way to go in terms of thinking of this as a really viable therapy. But the first step is to see whether you can take cells, turn them into motor neurons, provide a way of delivering them to patients with disease and having the cells survive.
I think it's incredibly exciting that this is happening right here in Upstate New York and at Upstate Medical University. And once again, I don't think people are aware of the level of cutting-edge research that's going on.
Well, this particular trial is, at the moment, is just being done at one place, which is in Emory. But our team is running the trial, meaning that we're supplying all the expertise and monitoring the data and doing all the analyses. And if it shows promise, it will come here as well.
Wow. So would you say at this juncture that there's hope for people with ALS?
Oh, I think there's great hope for people with ALS. There's greater hope for future generations. But I think that it's very important for people with this diagnosis to find an ALS specialist, because it turns out that in addition to drug treatments, which are very, very exciting and hopeful, just going to an ALS specialist turns out to prolong people's lives and to increase their function. There are many things that we can do to improve nutrition, to improve breathing capacity, to improve the quality of life in countless ways.
Speaking about that, the thing that's always struck me as perplexing is how could someone like Lou Gehrig die in 2 years and Stephen Hawking be around at 60-some-odd years, continued with that disease?
Yes, that's one of the really surprising things about this disease. Partly, this is an issue of healthcare resources. Stephen Hawking has great ability to provide care that is cutting edge, and not everybody can do that. But in addition, ALS patients progress at remarkably different rates. And so some people can survive for decades in relatively good shape, and other people decline over the course of several months. So it's something we really haven't figured out yet.
Yeah, there's a lot to learn. Well, I want to thank you so much, Dr. Jeremy Scheffner, Professor and Chair of Neurology at Upstate Medical University and Director of the ALS Clinic at University Hospital, for spending this morning helping to clarify the potential issues that surround ALS and the hope for new treatments. And your work obviously will be very, very important going forward. We have to take a short break, but stay right there. I'm Linda Cohen, and this is HealthLink on Air, 570 WSYR.